Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network, Season 6, Episode 45. And Dave, Dree Archer is no longer a Steeler.
Yeah, boy, you never know. The beauty of about what we do sometimes, David, is from day to day, you just never know which direction your day's going to go in. And that certainly happened yesterday afternoon as the Steelers claimed veteran kick returner slash wide receiver Jacoby Jones off waivers from the San Diego Chargers, and they waived former third-round draft pick Dree Archer in the process. And look, I'm kind of meh right now.
Right. You've been on record for a long time saying that Steelers should move on from Dree. I mean, you've been, you know, let's say it when you get things right. You called this a long time ago, as far back as last season. You didn't like the draft pick when it happened. You've been right about this all along.
Well, I mean, and it's not anything that I'm proud of either, because, I mean, look, I didn't like the pick, you're right from the get-go. But, you know, when you look back at that draft, and I kind of tried to take an optimist view of it last night or early this morning as well, too. You know, when you look at the players that were drafted after Dree, you know, the six immediately after Dree, you know, you can make some arguments and raise your eyebrows a little bit and say, man, you know, what if? But, you know, when you look at the big picture, and you remember, I tried to paint this thing in the past as saying, well,
yeah, Martavis and Dree, flip them.
Yeah, just Jedi mind trick yourself, you know, when it comes to that. But now I think, you know, if you look at the addition of Ross Cockrell, who was drafted, 10 or so picks after Dree Archer, you know, you can kind of pawn it off that way as well, too. So in my opinion, they waited a little bit too long to get rid of Dree. And, you know, as far as my feelings on Jacoby Jones goes, yeah, I'm kind of mad about him. You know, we'll see. But really, how worse can he be?
No downside. And yeah, look, you, as I say, you get this right all along. I've always been enamored of speed, try to find guys who can do things. And we saw something in the 2014 preseason that, you know, gave you some hope that Dree would be a guy who contribute. And then you see what happened with DeAnthony Thomas when the Chiefs came to town last year in 2014 and say, well, if you can find a role like that, you know, Dexter McCluster, we can talk about comparable guys. You say, you know, look, if you can get five touches and you get him in space a couple times, you know, maybe something will happen there. But it became apparent, you know, in week two of this season that Dree wasn't going to see the offense, see the field on offense. I mean, it just didn't happen. And we've even stopped talking about it. You know, at the beginning of the season, we talk about how many snaps would Dree get on offense, how many touches would he get. We stopped talking about it because it just wasn't, you know, you just knew he wasn't going to be on the field. And this is with the injuries and with the suspensions, you know, without the full complement of guys. And it's disappointing. I mean, look, they missed with the pick, okay? It happens. You know, guys miss with picks. I mean, if you want to kill Kevin Colbert for Dree, then make sure you praise the heck out of him for Martavis Bryant. So, yeah, you'd like to have it have worked out. You'd like to have a guy who can average 30 yards on a kick return and give you 5 to 7 touches and be a guy. But not only did he not show elite speed anymore, Dree didn't. You know, he's a rag doll. I mean, you know, first contact, he goes down. So my bet, Dave, is not only is he not going to be on the practice squad, my bet is he never plays in an NFL game again.
Well, you know, the big worry right now is that the New England Patriots are going to claim Dree and then turn him into something. You know, it seems like Belichick has a way with some of these smaller backs. But, I mean, let's face it, Dree Archer's no Kevin Falk. And he's probably not that other young running back that they're starting right now. I'm drawing a blank of who that is over there, the Pit Boy.
Oh, Deion Lewis.
Yeah, Deion Lewis. Good luck with that. And look, I don't hate Dree Archer personally. I wish him nothing but success. But it just didn't develop the way the Steelers hoped it would develop in Pittsburgh. And he goes down too quick on contact, as you said. And how many times have we seen him almost look like he get tackled by the turf monster, as well too. Not only as an offensive player, but as a return guy, never really. What did he return? Maybe one punt during his career. That's something that the Steelers hope that they could develop him into as well too. And you're right. If you're going to gig Kevin Colbert on the selection of Dree Archer, which, by the way, that was a compensatory draft pick. So, for all practical purposes,
still a pick. It's a pick.
Yeah, a fourth-round pick. But, you have to praise him for the selection of Martavis Bryant right now, even though he had, didn't miss the start of this season, four games with a suspension there.
Dave, I was doing this off memory, and some of it, because we saw Dree go back-to-back weeks before last week with career-long kick returns, which is kind of interesting. And I think his career long was 38 yards. I don't think he ever took a ball past the 45-yard line. I know he never got to midfield. And in his career, what he returned, kind of 20-plus kicks, maybe 30 kicks in his entire career. You got to get to midfield. It's a simple thing. He wasn't productive. He wasn't part of the offense. I'm with you on Jacoby Jones. This is just a roll of the dice. But the downside's limited. If you have to move on to back to Marcus Wheaton at some point, okay, maybe you do that. Jacoby Jones is not going to be a guy who sees any time on the offense either. It does give you, though, the alternative. If a receiver goes down in the game, you can put him in there. It means Sammy Coates probably doesn't see the field the rest of the year. If there is a regular complement of healthy players.
I would put Sammy Coates on the field before I would Jacoby Jones.
That's a good point. It's just it'll be a question of helmets. What you're doing in terms of, if you have a full complement, and they're getting a lot closer to a full complement of healthy guys. And let's just transition right into that. Some really good news on Thursday. I had speculated that if Tuitt and Will Allen were not full on Wednesday, that they were unlikely to play and dress in this game. The good news is they weren't full. They were limited on Wednesday, but they were full on Thursday. And so I would expect both those guys to be active and to dress. Tuitt obviously to start, and I would assume Will Allen will get the job back in front of Robert Golden. That's just my guess, Dave, but I would assume his experience back there would put him right back in there.
You could put up a good argument for Robert Golden to stay in there, though, couldn't you?
I have been pleasantly surprised, and I'll just say it this way. I'm surprised enough that I wonder why he didn't get an opportunity earlier. That's how surprised I am at how well he's played. I mean, did he look, we can go back to the Dallas game 2.5, 2 years ago, whatever it was, where, everybody was getting torched in that secondary. But if he can do this, it kind of just makes me wonder a little bit what they, why he hasn't been on the field at all.
Yeah, and it's tough to speculate about that, quite honestly. And the thing is, too, really, we know how Mike Tomlin loves Will Allen because of what's between his ears and his understanding of the defense and his him knowing where to be at on the field. We'll see how this ankle. He's had him on the sidelines since early portion of that Week 5 Monday night game. So Will Allen has missed a lot of time. So it will be interesting to see the decision as to who starts alongside Mike Mitchell on Sunday against the Raiders. But you could definitely make an argument that Robert Golden deserves to stay in there.
So to it back, Marcus Wheaton's been limited, so that's something to pay attention to. We'll see what his status is today. There was one other guy in the injury report, Dave, who
Matt Spaeth had a knee, failed to practice for a second straight day.
Yeah.
But I think didn't he miss two practices last week and played as well too? I can't remember if he was listed with a knee or just
the veteran day
not
off.
Injured. Yeah, not injury related. I can't remember if he missed Thursday or not. I know he sat out the Wednesday session. So that's
something. Has Jesse James gotten a helmet this year? Once or twice?
No, sir. No, sir.
He has not. Okay, so maybe, you're going to dress Coates and you're going to dress Jacoby Jones. Maybe he still doesn't, but because you've got Nixon, you've got Johnson playing. So we'll keep an eye and see if Jesse James gets a helmet for the first time. Something else to pay attention to.
Yeah, the good thing with Wheaton is he's moving in the right direction, limited on Thursday after sitting out Wednesday with an ankle. Remember, he kind of tweaked an ankle, what was it, in the game against the Chargers, I think, as well, too. Left that one kind of early, and Sammy Coates came in and filled in the rest of the way there. Mike Mitchell, concussion. Mike Vick, hamstring. Martavis Bryant, illness. All were able to practice fully on Thursday, so it looks like they're good to go. The two names, as you started with, Tuitt and Allen, and Wheaton and Spaeth, for that matter, are the ones that we'll be watching when the Friday injury report comes out.
Okay, so the story of the week has been all of a sudden Cam Hayward, his wife is pregnant and due any day now, and there's some conversation about what happens if, 7 a.m. Sunday morning, she's due to deliver. What happens with Cam Hayward? Dave, there are two things here, and I was talking to Jerry Dulac on my show yesterday, and I think he framed it perfectly. He said this is a spot where it doesn't do Cam Hayward any good to say anything about this, because if he says he's going to play in the game, and people, there'll be people who are like, well, he's not a good dad. You know, he's, of course, being good to his teammates, but he's not doing what he should do for his wife. And if he says, oh, I'm going to be there for my child, it's the most important thing in my life, it's, wow, you get paid, the amount of money that you get paid, and you only play 16 games a year, and you're going to skip one, you're going to walk out on your teammates. So, the odds are against it happening exactly so that he's going to miss the game, and maybe they induce labor, lots of things going on. But this is one of those things where he's best not saying anything and just kind of moving forward with things. I would expect he'll be on the field just because, like I say, the odds are low that everything would work out against him being able to play and see the birth of his child. So hopefully he gets to do both, and he's there. So, I don't have an opinion on this. If it were to be unlucky and he were to, she were to, be giving birth to the child at 11 o'clock Sunday morning, and he decided to be there, I wouldn't fault him at all for that.
David Todd, OBGYN.
Yeah, there you go.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly.
In this situation with Cameron Hayward, and it doesn't matter what you or I or think. Look, a birth of a child is a lot more important than a football game, right?
Hell yeah.
Who knows? It might be his only child. So I don't know. This is the part of what we do that I don't like, talking about the stuff that could potentially happen off the football field. So we'll see. Let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope the baby decides to wait and the baby's born healthy.
All right. Good stuff. Let's talk before we get into Steelers Raiders. Let's just take a talk a little bit about what's been going on around the league, because there's a lot of stuff going on. And of course, there was a divisional game last night, and it looked like the Browns were in it for a little bit. It's one of those games where you wonder, I talked about what was more likely, the Bengals to win by 40 or the Browns to win the game, and it ended up being neither of those things happened. It wasn't a particularly entertaining game. The Bengals did what they needed to do. Johnny Manziel was, good for a half and bad for a half, and just kind of as expected. And that moves the Bengals to 8-0. And I really, Dave, at this point, I think you're four back in the loss column with eight to go. You pretty much, I think last night the Bengals clinched the division. We not technically, obviously, but it's done.
It would have to take something catastrophic at this point. The Bengals do have a couple of tough games coming up, but that loss, the Steelers loss to the Bengals last week, in my opinion, kind of was the nail in the coffin, because you lose a head-to-head game like that, and then the Bengals still have another game against the Browns as well.
I think
too,
they do, right? Yeah, I think they do.
And perhaps another one against the Ravens as
they
well.
They do have the
too,
Ravens. They have the Ravens at home.
And the funny thing about it, though, is the Bengals, being as there's so many undefeated teams there in the AFC, they're still going to have to play week in, week out until any of those teams separate, which kind of looks like might be unlikely. So they might be forced to play all those guys, and they've been lucky with injuries so far this year as well too. And you have to kind of wonder when those proverbial odds, you know, catch up with them. You know, boy, it sure has hit the Steelers this year.
Yeah, I'm way less impressed with them watching the last two games than I was watching the first six games. I don't think they're in the elite class of the Patriots or the Broncos. They're a good football team. You know, Dalton's not in the class of Brady, of course, and I don't think he's in the class of Manning either. But this will be interesting to watch down the stretch. And yeah, I don't know that we've ever seen a season, literally any season, where things have been so stratified.
You're asking me if that's a word.
The divisions are done. Three of the divisions are done. They're all done. I mean, you know, we're talking about halfway through the season here. We're talking about what three teams are going to make the playoffs? Who's going to win the South? And who are the two wild cards going to be at week eight? And that's pretty. That just doesn't happen.
I don't understand why you don't think the Bengals have looked all that well. I mean, are they sexy? No, but
I didn't think they played well against the Steelers, and I'll put a lot of that on Dalton. And I didn't think they looked that great last night. I did think they looked great for 6 weeks, so maybe it's just, you know, everybody has a blip in performance.
Well, I will take any other one of those eight blips.
fair enough.
Look, they spread the ball around to the receivers. They've got two running backs that can run the football. They've got a tight end, probably one of the top three or four tight ends right now in the game, and they got a defense that can get them stops when they need it the most. And they don't allow their quarterback to be sacked on top of it. Andy Dalton the narrative is going to be the narrative, as we said, until playoff time. But it's hard to bet against them right now, and I consider them, and most people should, probably easily one of the top four teams, and you have to like their chances of coming out of that AFC right now.
Oh, I don't like their chances of coming out of the AFC. I don't think I'll put them fourth at best. I'll take Green Bay, I'll take New England, I'll take Denver over the Bengals. But, you know, hey, Steelers aren't in the top four, so they're better off in that respect than the Steelers are. Let's talk about the Raiders. And I know you've gotten a chance to watch a little bit more stuff. This is a team that comes in here. How about this? The Raiders come in eighth and ninth in points per game and yards per game. The Steelers come in at 21 and 20 on those two stats. Who would have believed that at the beginning of the season? This is, I know you've watched it, Dave. I mean, they play multiple receiver sets, all sorts of formations. They'll go, you know, two tight ends, three tight ends. They like to go vertical. They'll play heavy sets. They sometimes use six offensive linemen. You know, this is a fun team to watch. If you're a Raiders fan, man, it has been hell for the last, I almost want to say 40 years, but let's call it 20 years. You've got something to be excited about going forward here with the young quarterback, with the receivers, with a young running back, with some young players on defense. Woodson seems to be timeless back there at safety. And, you know, the idea that if you can add a couple more pieces and you look at the NFC West, Phil Rivers getting old, Kansas City, who knows, Peyton, you know, maybe on his last legs. This is a team that might be, you know, might have a run for a period of time now.
Yeah, Derek Carr really has played well. They're a fun team to watch on tape on offense when you start combing back through several of those games. And the more that you watch, the more impressed you are. And it starts with really their running game, as Latavius Murray's already averaging 46 yards per carry so far this season. So as usual,
4.6, yeah, right? 46 would be a big number.
Oh, okay, 4.6, my bad. I forgot the point. 534 yards already this year. And, you know, as usual, it starts with stopping the run. And if you do that, then you have Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper. And, man, Cooper is going to be one of these guys that we're probably talking about for, what, 10 more years?
Yeah, he's dynamite.
He really is an explosive player. Looks like he gets smarter by the week. Crabtree, how can you not be impressed with what he's doing? I mean, he was left for dead, pretty much, and he leads the team in catches, two more than Amari Cooper with 40 so far. Both those guys can get vertical on you. Both of those guys can work underneath on you. Both those guys can take it to the house on a screen. There's really not much that those two players can't do when you consider that, you know, you got a Steelers defense that, you know, as good as they have been at times this year, there's still a defense that allows bend and tries not to break. And when you consider that the Raiders are probably going to be able to move the ball with some success in this game, combined with the fact that they got a kicker in Sebastian Janikowski that's probably anytime the ball's inside the Steelers 40s, it's going to be 3 points there. The Steelers offense is going to have to be the difference, I think, in this game. And fortunately, they're playing a Raiders defense that probably you could compare to the Steelers defense. They're good at times, you know, bend at times. They've given up, you know, a few points at times this year as well, too. And, you know, good luck stopping Khalil Mack and who's on the other side over there? I'm drawing a blank. But former 49, Alden Smith.
Alden Smith, right.
You know, good luck stopping them. And then also when it comes to them and their run defense, Big Dan Williams, as we talked about the other day, really has played well. They're getting okay play, I think, out of their linebackers. This is not a stellar defense, in my opinion. Now, Woodson's a smart guy out back in the back end of that thing. He'll bait you. He'll read a quarterback's eyes, everything that goes along with that. But the Steelers, you know, should be able to have success moving the football in this game, and they're going to have to finish drives. And I think the key defensively for the Steelers is just get Derek Carr in those uncomfortable behind the chains situations there where you can kind of dictate what he's going to do. And if you're able to do that, and look, I don't think he's been sacked a ton this year. What 8 times, I think, so far. He has a quarterback rating of 105.7. This is a dangerous game for the Steelers, and who would have thought that when 8 or 9 weeks
ago? Right, and people, I mean, anybody who said it's a dangerous game for the Steelers would just say it based on the history of the Steelers have had trouble with the Raiders, but that's been out there most of the time. And I'm with you. This is Dave. You know, we thought last week we were going to see a game in the, you know, where the scoreboard was getting lit up and 55, 60, 65 points was kind of where we both were. And I think a lot of people talking about the game were, it obviously did not happen last week. But it would not surprise me again if we saw that type of game, on Sunday, a high scoring game where, you know, guys are going up and down the field. We'll see if it plays out that way. Steelers defense is, it's the opposite of what we've seen sometimes in the past. And it's a kind of what we've seen from the offense in a negative way is we saw the offense put up tons of yards last year and the points weren't compensatory with the yards. And this year, the Steelers defense has been the opposite. I think they're 20th or 24th, I think maybe 24th in total yards allowed. And so, you know, some of that when a game gets out of hand at the end, maybe it happens. But the Steelers haven't been in many games that, you know, were blowouts. So really, the 49ers game is really the only one. So they're 24th in yards against, but they're 5th in scoring defense. And at the end of the day, if you could have those two stats one way or the other, that's exactly how you want them. And it's because they've been able to get pressure on the quarterback. They've been able to generate turnovers. The problem is the last two games, they've turned the ball over 6 times. And we talked about San Diego and Arizona, those two games. Steelers won the turnover battle 5-0 in those games. Could argue they could have lost either of those games. But the turnover battle they won, and that made the difference. They got a defensive touchdown in that Chargers game. In the past two games who was it 2 weeks ago? Help me out here. Kansas City. They turned it over 3 times, and they get none. And this one, they get 2. And if they got the 2 and didn't turn it over 3, I'm pretty sure they would have won. But they turned it over 3, so they've been the turnover differential has been 6-2 in the last 2. So they got to straighten that out.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to defensive stats and rankings and all like that, there's really only one now that I like the stat that I'd like to pay attention to. And if you read me off the this stat of every team in the league at you know, after 8 weeks in the season, I can probably tell you you know, what pretty close to what their record is and their chances of not only making the playoffs but winning a Super Bowl. And that, of course, is the average net yards passing differential.
Yep.
Because that really, David, I really enjoy going back and looking at the history of this stat and everything involved in it, because the passing game is so prevalent in today's game, and really for the last, 20 years or so, and especially with the rule changes and everything that goes along with that, it really is a key stat. And when you look at the Steelers, you know, what they called a defensive NEA, stat so far through the first eight games of theirs, they're sitting at 6.38, and anything over six, in my opinion, is if you're right at six or between six and six and a half, you're an average defense, and that is exactly where the Steelers defense ranks in these rankings right now, is 15th or 16th overall. So they have played well, boy, there's been some possessions that the Steelers defense just looked, pretty much unstoppable. However, you know, they still giving up some drives. They're still giving up some passing yards at inopportune times. And if this defensive NEA stat does not start dropping, this is going to be a 500 or one game better than 500 team. And obviously, if that stat starts going in the opposite direction and climbing higher, oh, Lord, look out. I mean, we could see a team finish below 500 for the first time since Tomlin has been here. So that's my key concern. And they're facing, they're facing an Oakland Raiders offense that has an offensive NEA stat of 7.45. And anytime you're talking about a team with a number north of seven, that's pretty damn good. And put it in comparison, although Ben Roethlisberger's missed, four games, the Steelers' offensive passing NEA stat is 6.21. So when you look at the Steelers' offensive NEA being less than their defensive NEA, that certainly isn't good, because if your defense is going to be bad, your offense better be able to carry you, and that's something that really hasn't happened yet. You know, Ben Roethlisberger talks about how he still has faith that this is a 30 point per game, average team moving forward. Well, now's a great time to start showing that. starting this week, because I'm with you, David. You know, even though we didn't get the shootout that we both maybe kind of expected last week, I think this one could have the winner first one to possibly 31 in this game.
Yeah, I know the site, Dave. Cold Hard Football Facts does a lot of things with stats, and they've got some of their own stats, but they put them all together and they rank each team on all these different things. And one of the things is they have a real quarterback rating differential. they have their quality stat power rankings. And if you look at it overall, I think the Steelers check in at number 11, the Raiders check in at number 10. And, this is it. I mean, Derek Carr has really, he's, like I say, they're a fun team to watch on tape. This is going to be a challenge, and it'll be interesting for the Steelers secondary and the pass rushers if they're up to the challenge. Because, shockingly enough, 8 weeks into the season, we can really just say the offense has really underwhelmed and let the Steelers down. And I don't know that the defense has been better than the offense, Dave, but the defense has been much better than expected, and the offense has been much worse than expected. So, that's why they're 4-4.
And, boy, how many total snaps have we had? Still, you hate to blame it all on injuries, obviously. How many snaps has this entire starting, let's say, 11 or 12 players been on the field together?
Not zero. I mean, if you put Pouncey on the list, zero. So,
well, I mean, and talking about defense too. I mean, you had Shazier out a number of games. You have Stephon Tuitt's missed the last two games. You've had Will Allen missed since week five there. Who else has been? Jarvis missed a game. Not that that's a huge.
Yeah, I think the defense. Other than Shazier, I think they've been relatively, relatively healthy. I mean, you had the two from Tuitt. You're right, but And it's also, defense, it just doesn't lend itself to one guy being as much of a difference maker, obviously, as a quarterback. So, let's get into kind of what's going on around the league. And I don't know what this week, what caught your attention. You did make a good point about Jacoby Jones, that this was not, he did not clear waivers and the Steelers signed him. They claimed him off of waivers. So they assumed the contract that he had with the Chargers. He signed a 2-year deal. He's due $3 million next year, so he's here for, he's here for 8 games and whatever may come after that. But they will shake hands with him at the end of the season.
Yeah, he's scheduled to earn $3 million next year. That's about what you make, I think, David.
Yeah, you take a zero off and divide by a couple things, and you're about there.
Yeah, I put out a public service announcement on Twitter last night for people not to buy his jersey for Christmas. I think that would be a poor decision.
Number 15. Who's the last number 15? I don't have it. So what do you got it?
Well, Gardner wore it, right, during the preseason. Before that, I mean, in a regular season game,
yeah,
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not hitting me right off.
I do not have that. I got my media guide, 10 feet away from me. I could look it up, but – not off the top of my head can I think of a 15. A receiver, Gene Kleins for the Pirates, way back in the day. I'm dating myself.
My head's about to explode here. And look, that bait, the rest of his base salary this year, talking about Jacoby Jones is not guaranteed. So if Jacoby Jones is not the guy that they think he potentially could be, you can just cut bait with him real quick. But yeah, if he does last the final 8 games, he'll be gone probably a March cap casualty, because there's absolutely no way that they can keep him under contract with that number there. One other thing we failed to hit on. The Steelers, boy, 3 new guys on the roster since last Sunday. Of course, you had the Steelers signed Isaiah Pede, who we've already talked about, who, by the way, now it looks like he's going to get a helmet, right?
Well, I want to give you this. Well, I'm thinking about this. Josh Brown. Help me out. Who's Josh Brown?
Kicker, right?
Yeah. Was he on the roster for a game? In 2014, did they sign him during the week and then not activate him? Because they were worried about sushi?
No, that wasn't him. It was that was the former Bengals kicker that they had signed for a week there.
Well, I got in the media guide, Josh Brown, 2014.
I can't remember, David.
All right, well, I'm reading it to you. So we go back. We got Willie Reed, the wide receiver out of Florida State, 2006-07.
That's a good one.
Bobby Shaw in 98. Steve Bono, the quarterback, in 87 and 88, and Mike Kruzek, 76 to 79. 15 has not been a popular number for the Steelers to be handing out. That's Mike Kruzek probably leads that list. And Mike Kruzek had some – 76 was an amazing year for that Steelers team when he had to take over, and they shut out 7 of their last 10 opponents. But there you go. There's a little history of number 15.
Boy, Willie Reed, wow.
Mm. Third-round pick, second third-round pick, Florida State?
Up there.
Yeah, high round pick. All right, so the answer of him getting a helmet, because why is he getting a helmet?
No, do you think he does?
Oh,
that?
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't.
You don't think he does?
I don't. I mean, it certainly didn't sound like it the way Mike talked about it, and I don't know.
But that was Tuesday.
Yeah, well, right. And Dre Archer was his kick returner as of Tuesday. He made that emphatically clear. So
Willie Reed, third round pick, 2006.
I'm guessing. So who doesn't get helmets? Chickalo doesn't get a helmet. Doran Grant. Does Doran Grant get a helmet? He doesn't get a helmet.
No. I don't see how Grant gets one. Let's see. You're going to have Grant down. You're going to have one QB down, right?
Yeah, Vic, Chickalo, Grant.
Jesse James.
Well, Jesse James may be a question mark with Spate.
Well, okay, a tight end.
A tight end. That's 4. Who's hurt?
One offensive lineman.
Who's hurt? Terrence Garvin is 5. An offensive lineman is 6, and then you got a question mark with Wheaton, Coates, Wheaton and Coates, and maybe that's the 7th guy.
And LT
Walton, right.
So there's your, if that's the case, then that's your 7, which would mean Pete gets a helmet.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Maybe he does.
So. Let's see, and Doran Grant too promoted from when I wrote that news up the other day when Doran Grant was promoted, which happened on a Wednesday. I found the timing of it kind of curious, you know. And
right, we
come
thought
to
it
find
happened
out
last week was Willie Gay, William Gay having a potential shoulder injury. It made sense the week before, and what he dropped a little news on us.
Yeah, he claimed that a couple teams had interest in him in signing him off the practice squad. So the Steelers, signed him instead, and now he's on. And look, you can make a reason why that needed to happen anyway. The Steelers only had four cornerbacks on their roster, right now as well too. So it makes sense on many levels. And
let me ask you, Dave, do you think the Steelers learned a lesson last year, letting Josh Morrow go and letting Nick Williams go? I mean, probably not. The answer is probably not. But saying, you know, we should play this, we should take this seriously. Not to, that's the wrong phrase, but
I just don't think they were as high on Nick Williams or Josh Morrow as some people may have thought.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
I think that's what it boils down to. The thing with Doran Grant, too, and this kind of resurfaced with him being promoted, if you remember way back to when he was drafted, Carnell Lake, I think it was the final question that Carnell Lake was asked during the press conference post-selection. He was asked potentially a move for Doran Grant to safety, and Carnell and so many words said, well, that's in my notes and kind of thing that we may potentially look at, yada, yada. Keith Butler was asked about that during his weekly talk with the media on Thursday, and he also didn't rule it out. But
Grant has said he hasn't taken one snap as a safety yet.
Exactly. But, I mean, that doesn't mean anything in the future. What it means right now is I wouldn't expect him to start taking any snaps at safety, at the rest of this season in practice. Right now, he's a cornerback and really, for all practical purposes, a potential special teams guy that, probably going to be inactive for several of these last eight games here. So we'll continue monitoring that with Doran Grant. You can see some arguments why he, his physicality, his ability to tackle, and all like that. You can make some arguments that, yeah, he is a candidate to move to safety. And that was kind of really the narrative on him by several, draft analysts ahead of his selection there, and probably why he was, kind of dropped to the fourth round as a cornerback in that draft. So that move there, of course, Jacoby Jones new to the roster and Isaiah new to the roster as well too.
All right, let's should we get into this week's games?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Let me get my data up here. The opener, no games. By the way, they have the NFL has announced that they are going to continue playing games in London, and they have expanded the schedule a little bit. So this seems like by 2020 we may very well have a game a week in London. The way things are going, because I think it's going to be up to five or six next year, and they've continued to pick up these options in three different stadiums that they're going to play games there. So that was another interesting piece of news that came out this week. All right, Dave, so kick things off with the Jags at the Jets -7.5. The Jags haven't been taking that step forward that I keep waiting for them to take, as the Raiders have. They've got the young starting QB as well. Allen Robinson's developed into a pretty good receiver. You felt like with Gus Bradley there, that defense would improve. The Jets, they were really good every game this year until they were really bad out in Oakland. But I think they get it right and win this one rather comfortably. I'll take the Jets.
Boy, this is Jacksonville's going to have to start doing something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they really – look, nobody's going to expect them to win the division this year. But, I mean, they're not far out of it, right?
Right. They're a game out. Yeah.
Look, if any team should have motivation this week to get back in this thing, it's Jacksonville. I'm not saying they're going to win this game, but I think I think this is a field goal game, David. So give me Jacksonville plus the 7.5.
Rams on the road to the Vikings. Vikings -2. You know where I am. I'm on the Rams. I like this team. I think they're going to be there at the end of the day. I'll take the points.
Boy, what an interesting line this one is. And you would think that the Rams defense would be able to be the big difference maker in this game. But that guy, Adrian Peterson, he's pretty good. Regardless, I'm with you. I like the Rams defense too much. And after this week, if the Rams don't get it done this week, then, you know, we're probably giving the defense maybe too much credit.
Right.
But for now, I'll take the Rams plus the points.
This is an elimination game here in Buffalo. They're a three-point favorite over the Dolphins. Whoever loses, you know, it's not officially kiss the season goodbye, but it's going to be brutal from here on in. I'll take Buffalo at home minus the field goal.
Yeah, I'm just not convinced. I mean, Miami just have got some problems over there. And, look, I know they had a good first couple of games with Dan Campbell there, but I'm just not a believer in Ryan Tannehill, although Buffalo's got some issues at quarterback as well. So I think this comes down to coaching. And I'll give it to Rex Ryan in this one. I'll have Buffalo cover this one.
Tennessee goes to New Orleans. The Saints seem to have gotten things right here on a season that looked kind of lost early on. With the Falcons coming back to the pack and the NFC being very similar to the AFC, you know, you can be, if you're 500, you're in it right now. The Saints are on a roll. They're given eight, and, you know, we see the chaos. I do think Malarkey will do some things differently, and I do expect them to be a little bit better the rest of the way, but I'll take the Saints at home.
Yeah, their offense. You know, I think that the Tennessee defense, you know, has been playing okay this season, but it's just their offense right now with a rookie quarterback and all, and I think he's even still questionable for the. I don't think I've seen whether or not he's going to play. Boy, Drew Brees, what a game that Saints game
was.
Did you watch?
I didn't understand how they got the touchdown and the field goal to win it in the last minute. I mean, the Giants went three and out in 20 seconds, I guess.
13 touchdown passes in that
13
game.
13 touchdown passes, 7-6, 6.
Wow.
Moves.
And just playing in the Superdome, that place is going to be noisy and just tough to play in. So, give me the Saints to cover.
Patriots minus 14, hosting the Skins. I'll take the Pats.
Wow. Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, David. I mean, that's a lot of points, but playing in New England, that's just going to be too tough. I'm with you. Lay the points in that one.
Really, maybe, to me, the most intriguing matchup outside of maybe the Steelers and the Raiders, which I think is a pretty intriguing matchup. Green Bay goes to Carolina, a 1 o'clock kickoff in this one. Green Bay minus 2.5. And I don't know, did what Denver do kind of show some things about how to slow down the Packers and tell you that maybe they're not all of that? Carolina gives up 17 points in the fourth quarter and then has to win an OT. This is a tough one. I'll take Green Bay minus 2.5. But that matchup of Green Bay's offense against Carolina's defense should be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, and Carolina doesn't need any tutelage on how to play defense. But those two linebackers inside, Keekly and the other, Thomas Davis. It just looks like there's five of them out there at all times. But even with that said, I'm not sure. And who's that corner they have back there?
Josh Norman. Yeah.
Oh man, playing lights out as well too. I just think that Green Bay is just going to be too much. I think there's going to be a key turnover too. Cam Newton hasn't been great with the football at times, right?
He wasn't. You know, he made some. I love Cam. I love me some Cam, but he did make some bad throws in that game. Made some good ones late, but he made some bad ones too.
I think a pick six is going to be the difference in this, so I'm going to give Green Bay the cover on the road. That's a tough cover too.
Yeah, Josh Norman, what was he, a fourth round pick out of? I'm trying to remember a smaller school, but it shows, you know, that you get a Cortez Allen, you get a Josh Norman, you know, that can make all the difference in the world. I want to pat myself on the back with some of my upset picks last week. I think I talked about Tampa going into Atlanta. And a few others. The Atlanta goes to San Francisco for this one. Kaepernick on the bench. When you turn to Blaine Gabbert, all hell has broken loose in your organization. I'll give it to the Falcons here, but just because I'd be shocked if Blaine Gabbert puts up 13 points. So I'll take Atlanta minus 7.
Josh Norman, fifth round, 2012, out of Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina, right?
Boy, this Atlanta game. You know, the thing.
What was Cortez? Was Cortez 2011, fourth round out of Citadel? 2011 sound right?
That was a year with Curtis Brown.
Maybe 2010, huh?
Man, you're making me have a test during this podcast. I keep getting 2011 round 4.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll take the Falcons in San Fran.
The thing that scared me about this game is Atlanta having to travel, you know, make that travel out west there. But even so, man, San Francisco's defense just isn't all that. Blaine Gabbert starting for them. It's hard not to pick Atlanta in this game. So I'll pick Atlanta lay the points.
Giants go to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay plus 2.5. I'm staying with my boy Jameis. Give me the Bucs plus the points.
Man, Peyton, no way I'm going to go against, not Peyton, Eli in this game. Coming off of a good performance there, I think that this Giants offense is starting to click some. I know Tampa Bay's at home here, but give me the Giants to I like them to blow Tampa Bay out in this one.
All right, Denver goes to Indianapolis, Denver minus 5.5. Pep Hamilton gets the axe. It's really chaos down there. I mean, just for amusement – for our purposes, a Denver blowout would, set that whole place on fire. So that would be interesting to see. I think Denver, I'll take Denver minus 5.5. Luck was good in the fourth quarter, but through an interception in OT, I don't know what the problem is there, but they got problems.
How is Indianapolis going to protect Luck? Look at the back end of that Denver defense as well too. I mean, it's just a solid defense, and that's what's been carrying them in those poor Peyton Manning performances so far this year. There's no way I can pick the Colts in this game. So give me Denver and lay the points on the road.
Eagles go to Dallas minus 3. You know where I am Sunday night. I'll be rooting for Chip and the Eagles minus 3. I'll take him. Castle has not been particularly good. He was miserable on a game winning drive to get a field goal. He took a sack that you just could never, ever, ever, ever take. Dallas' season's on the brink here with Romo out. But I think the Eagles go on the road and win it.
You know, the thing here with that, the Dallas defense, really, I understand Dallas has had, quarterback issues and all like that with Tony Romo out. Dallas's defense really hasn't held up their end of the bargain while he's been out. And that's really what's kind of killing him. And on the flip side, Philadelphia really has a better defense than maybe a lot of people give them credit for.
Yep.
You know, we talk about that NEA stat earlier. Their defensive NEA is a very nice 5.0. So, being as how Dallas's offensive number is 5.65, this just isn't a good matchup for Dallas at all. So, I know it's a divisional game. I know Dez Bryant is back and all like that, but it's hard for me to go against the Eagles on this line, even on the road. Give me the Eagles later points.
Arizona, Baltimore, Detroit, Houston, Kansas City, and Seattle on buys this week, the Monday night game. Nobody's going to watch. Chicago at San Diego minus 4. Whatever. I'll take Rivers.
Yeah, I'll take Rivers. No Matt Forte in this game either. That's gonna hurt. Now the Chargers are without Keenan Allen, bless his heart, out for the season. What a great start to the season he had, but now gone for the season. It'll be interesting to see how that San Diego offense is able to kind of adjust to that. But just too many weapons, I think, in my opinion, just a better football team, and that's not saying much. But give me San Diego to cover at home against the Bears.
Steelers and the Raiders. Heinz Field, 1 o'clock kickoff. I'll be at Stage AE at 9 o'clock. If you happen to be in the neighborhood, drop on by and say hello, 9 to 11. Dave, you look at this, and, I'm going to take the Steelers, but I'm not actually taking them to cover. I think this will be an entertaining game. I'll say I hope Ben plays better. This has been a team that has not performed in the first half. The last 6-plus quarters that Ben has played, they've put up 19 points. They really have, they've not been what they're supposed to be. The loss of Le'Veon Bell obviously is big, but I think D'Angelo Williams and the other weapons they have, they'll still be able to do things. I'll take the Steelers in this game, but I'm going to take them 31-29.
You know, we talk about how the first one of 31 maybe wins this game. The Steelers will come up short of doing that thanks to a missed two-point conversion late in the game. However, they'll do enough. They'll get a key turnover in this game. I think Roethlisberger will play well enough to get it done. I like the Steelers to just barely cover this one, 29-23 over the Raiders.
All right. Go on the same page. Pretty much how that goes. Anything else to take care of? You get by this one, you're 5-4, you get the Browns at home, the third straight home game, you go 6-4 into the bye. Obviously, Teams getting healthier. We'll see what happens with Maurkice Pouncey. We'll see what happens, if anything, with Mike Adams. It seems like a lost season for him and maybe the end of his Steelers career, basically. But, you know, this game Sunday, certainly if they lose, it doesn't knock them out of the picture, but they'd be 1-5 in the conference. So they'd have to kind of they don't want to be in a tiebreaker with anybody for a playoff berth. But you and I have both said, Dave, that this is now a really meaningful game.
Yeah, and on a scale, on that scale of 1 to 10 that we like to use, if it's not a 10, it's a 9 in my opinion. Especially you got the Browns coming in off of a long kind of layoff the next week. It's time now for them, if they can win these two games, and if they can get healthy and go into their bye week. You know, I like the chances of them rolling the dice, even though they got some tough games, you know, down the stretch there. So, yeah, if it's not a 10, it's definitely a 9 or a 9.5 on the must-win scale that we like to use. Now, something to pay attention to on Sunday, especially early, Roethlisberger needs 9 more passing yards, David, to pass Johnny Unitas on the all-time passing yardage list. Unitas is 15th overall on that list right now. If Roethlisberger has an outstanding game, meaning 321 passing yards or more, he'll move into 14th place overall ahead of the great Joe Montana, who played 15 years in the league, of course, with the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. And at some point this season, Roethlisberger should pass Kerry Collins for 13th place on the all-time yards list. And all three of those quarterbacks will be passing Western Pennsylvania boys. So I found that kind of a little bit amusing on top of it. But the biggest thing is Mike Tomlin likes to say is come out of that stadium with a win. And I'm getting tired of talking about losses, and it's not good for business either when the Steelers lose. So obviously hope they can get off the schneid this week and get a win against the Raiders there. All right, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We got a few donations over the course of the last few days. Thank you, everybody, for that. That's what helps keep this show alive, you know, with the cost and everything that's involved with it. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate button up in the black navigation bar to the right there, and we would appreciate your support if you can give it to us. Make sure that you're listening to David Todd weekdays on the radio, 970 ESPN in the afternoon, and also the pre-game as well on the radio as well, too. He does a fantastic job of that. David, have a great weekend.
You as well. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.